Off the ball
on News Talk
in association with the Air Sport app, allowing you to cast your favourite sporting action from your tablet or mobile phone straight to your TV.
If you're at the next four upcoming Leinster home games and you're wearing the latest Leinster jersey, then post a selfie on Instagram and tag at Lifestyle Sports Rugby, and you're in with a chance of winning a gift card. That's with thanks to Lifestyle Sports, official retail partner of Leinster Rugby. And Sean O'Brien was helping launch that competition this afternoon, and he spoke earlier on with Oisin Langan.
Sean O'Brien of Leinster, Ireland and the Lions. At the moment, I guess, trying to shake off a bit of a niggle, a bit of an injury. You might talk to us about the nature of that and what it is and what the prospect of return is and when.
Yeah, it's just a bit of hip tightness at the minute, so it kind of came on me there the last few weeks, and something I've been trying to manage. So cracked into rehab, and it's improved a good bit. So probably hasn't improved enough this week to be available for selection, but hopefully next week. So
it's something that you kind of have to manage, I guess, when you're at this stage of your career and heading into your early 30s. Is that something you're okay with, knowing that some weeks you just might not be able to train as hard as others, some games you won't be able to play in? Like, I know you'd love to play against Ulster, but yeah, the body is saying, look, you need a rest because there's bigger challenges to come.
Yeah, well, it's not really the body saying it. It's just you pick up these bits and pieces, and, you know, I'm used to managing injuries now, so at this stage, so it's not very different for me, or there's nothing new there for me. I know how to deal with them, and you know, I know not to rush back or to push something to try and play, which I've done probably in the past before. You know, when you're younger, you're an eager beaver, but you realise that you have to get things right first before you get back on the field. So that's what I'm trying to do.
Is that the hardest thing as a player, to not rush back, to not try and hide something from the physio, to try and get out on the pitch? Because as a player, all you want to do is play, which is absolutely and completely understandable.
Yeah, sometimes. You know, in fairness to the medical staff at Leinster, you know, they're brilliant, and they manage it pretty well too, and make sure that you are right coming back. You know, you have to be open and honest about these things, and there's no point in going out there half-cocked. So, you know, it's important that everyone is fit, because we have a big squad, we've quality players, and if you're at 50%, you know, there's someone else out there that's at 100, so that can do your job.
I imagine there's a great level of trust with Leo and Stuart and the staff as well, John Fogarty, Gervin Dempsey, Guy Easterby, that you can say, you know what, I'm not 100% this week, or maybe there's just something I need to rest, and you can rest, and they know you're not trying to DOS it. If anything, you're actually trying to save yourself for the big games, or save yourself for the right time to play. The big games is probably the wrong phrase to use.
Yeah, of course. You know, they're in contact with the S&C staff and the medical department the whole time. So yeah, they trust us to make sure that we're giving them honest feedback, and they'll look after us as best as possible.
Yeah, I remember a couple of years back, I think you were on Off the Ball with Brian O'Driscoll, one of our hosts, and he was talking about minding himself and all that, and it's a term that maybe sports people maybe don't like to use, but it is something that has to be done. Is it a matter now that you're kind of looking and going, okay, I'm going to pitch up for the Champions Cup, or I'm going to try and peak for those Champions Cup games and then Ireland, or can it work like that?
No, it's not about minding yourself. It's minding your body off the field, and making sure that you're doing your work and you're doing your rehab, and you know, you're making sure that you're fit every week. So I wouldn't class it as minding yourself. You know what I mean? When you play, you don't mind yourself. It's after you play, then you try and get yourself back in a good place to go again the following week. So you get smart with things like that, and you understand your body a lot better.
Is that the hardest thing, to mind yourself off the park? Because we've seen it recently, and it was the Ireland forwards coach, whose name has slipped my mind now, basically said Cian Healy changed his diet, he changed a lot of things that he does off the park, and look at him now, he's absolutely flying. Is that something that you've had to continually do, continue to evolve, change your diet, look at your diet, look at doing, like, you know, yoga, Pilates, the whole lot?
Yeah, there's certain things that you bring into your training plan, and your nutrition side of things is obviously massive too, but I think I'm pretty on top of that side of things in terms of my nutrition and my lifestyle now. You know, in previous years, you know, I've said this before, that probably hadn't, there was probably bits and pieces that I wasn't looking after myself well enough on. I suppose you evolve as a player, and as you get older, you get more experience, and again, you get to know your body better and better as the years go on. So it is a big part of it now.
And how do you feel then when you're watching the game against Connacht and you're seeing Van der Fleer and Levy flying and Max Deacon coming in flying, does it kind of up the ante for you? Does it fire a shot across the bows, or how does it work?
It doesn't really, you know. I'd expect that from those lads. They're all competitive, they're all class players, they've all proved it time and time again. So, you know, Max is probably a bit younger and you know, is getting a bit more game time and more game time, but the other two lads are performing week in, week out when the opportunity to get. So it's no surprise to any of us, and that's what you want in the squad. You want competition, you want lads fighting for their place, you want quality players that are able to do that week in, week out.
And how does it work then in training when you say that they're teammates, but they're also competition? You want to play with each other, but you also want to kind of stand out to get picked. So how does it work when you're training together and working together and playing together?
Yeah, it was a competitive environment, so that's what I mean by you want that competitiveness at training, and there is that edge there at training, but at the same time, there's a massive respect between players and people alike. There's no one going around training trying to kill each other as such, but it's a competitive environment and you want standards to be high, so everyone is trying to push that and everyone's trying to drive that.
A couple of big games coming up in the Champions Cup. Obviously, there's the game against Ulster in the Pro 14 as well. You're in a very good place. You've set yourselves up well for the rest of the season.
Yeah, we've done well over the last number of weeks, put ourselves in some good positions. But the next 3 or 4 weeks of this block is highly important to the rest of the year. So it's an exciting time for us. It's something that everyone is looking forward to. It's something that the squad is looking forward to, and it'll be interesting to see what happens. But we're building nicely, and we've done a lot of hard work and put ourselves in a good place.
Did you take something more than match wins out of those matches against Exeter, if you follow my lead there? I mean, the way those games were won maybe gives you a boost, maybe sends the right message, just kind of gives you the confidence to know, okay, maybe we're in with a shout of this Champions Cup.
Yeah, well, you take it week by week, but I definitely think we took a step in the right direction with those two games, with how tough and physical they were and how we came back the second day and played in the second half. So it probably give a lot of the younger guys a lot of confidence going forward in the competition, knowing that we grind it out when we need to. So it's a good thing. There's a lot of positives to take from those two games. You know, we backed up you know, what we said we were going to do during the week, which was a good thing.
Lots of big hits in those games, lots of big hits in every game. It's something we've been talking about a lot on Off the Ball over the last couple of weeks, talking about maybe it's time to look at the laws and how players go into contact. Maybe contact should be lower so you can avoid concussions and more serious injury. That would also create a bit more offloading. It would create a different game, maybe a more open game. How would you feel about that as a player?
To be honest with you, I haven't thought about it. You know, it's... I don't know if those people would be saying the same stuff if they're still playing the game. You know, it's very difficult to try and put a rule on going lower, and you know what I mean? It's an abrasive physical sport we're playing. So, you know, you look at years ago, there wasn't probably a word said about any of this. Now, yeah, it's a bit different, all right, but you do have to take in player welfare and safety into it, but... you know, that's what the referee is there for. So players should know at this stage that the head or neck area is a no-go, and should adapt.
Is it worth examining, though? It's no harm in looking, surely.
It's not for me to decide.
But it's not something you feel needs immediately to be addressed. And I appreciate
it does have to be immediately addressed. I think it's something that just players have to be more aware of, I think, around the laws of the game. And Once we understand that and you go about in a disciplined and good manner, you know, it'll reduce a lot of those, I suppose, headshots that people have taken over the past while.
And finally, last time we had a chat was in Tullow Rugby Club, and you were very honest about your Lions experience. There's been a lot of debate since. Warren has had his say, and all you two have chatted. Have you? Is there any regrets about how it happened or what was said, or how do you feel about it now, having chatted to Warren and having got your feelings out?
I don't feel anything about it now. It's done with, and it's a thing of the past now. And you know, I've said what I said, and I spoke to all the coaches, and you know, I'm leaving it there.
Yeah. It's good though that it's out there now and it can be talked about, and the learnings can be taken for the next Lions tour, whether you're on it or someone else is on it. And
yeah, which maybe they will, maybe they won't.
Okay. And just before we let you go, we're here for Lifestyle Sports. I suppose a supporter's experience.
Yep.
Leinster would be nothing without their supporters. The support is fantastic, isn't it?
Yeah, it's unbelievable. You look at the Connacht game, for instance, place was sold out again. I never had so many phone calls for tickets, so it's great. You know, it's a great initiative by Lifestyle, and it's obviously great that the supporters get something back as well, and that's what we're trying to do for them as well, week in, week out. So, you know, supporting Leinster is unbelievable, as always.
You're looking forward to all those calls for tickets at the Six Nations, Dan?
We'll see.
Cheers, Sean.
Cheers.
Sean O'Brien there, who I dare say never wants to talk about Warren Gatland ever again. Don't ask me about Gatland. I have nothing more to say.
No, I'm sure he regrets making the comments.
Yeah.
You would hope that it doesn't turn players off, being as honest as he was at the time, but I'd say it does.
The ladies in the football, half an hour gone.
Yeah, it's been a very good game, actually. One thing that has been a feature for me is how much the referee's letting go. I think it's Jonathan Moss, the match referee tonight. So anything real 50-50 challenges, although as soon as I say that, Wilshere just received a yellow card for a late challenge, and Cesc Fabregas. But anything that's time, well-timed, albeit it might happen to take out the player simultaneously, he's letting it go. And it's led to almost like a cup tie sort of frantic feel to the game. Jack Wilshere has been to the fore for Arsenal. His pass completion rate is incredibly high. He's picked out a lovely couple of incisive passes going in between the lines, but the best chance is probably one apiece, that miss that Richie described for Morata earlier in the game, and then what did prove to be just a brilliant save from Thibaut Courtois as he pushed an Alexis Sanchez effort onto one post, and then it went across goal onto the other, but somehow did not end up over the line. So 0-0, 31 minutes played, but it's been a very good 0-0.
Okay, more rugby in just a second.
Off the Ball on Newstalk,
in association with the Air Sport app, allowing you to cast your favourite sporting action from your tablet or mobile phone straight to your TV.
Eddie O'Sullivan is on the line. Evening, Eddie.
Evening, Joe.
I enjoyed you and Stephen Ferris freezing your asses off at Ravenhill the other night. Look cold.
It was definitely chilly, all right. Yeah.
We've had some really good games over the Christmas for whatever reason. Why might that be in comparison with last year, where they felt somewhat flat?
I'm not sure why, because there were certainly, you know, the coach had to move the chess pieces around down selection. But I suppose maybe there's more depth in the squad now. And there was certainly not much in it, except, I suppose, the hammering that Ulster took down in Connacht. Other than that, it was pretty much full metal jacket the whole way, you know.
And so what sense do you make of the Ulster game from 17-0 down? The red card, obviously a huge factor, both Ulster props being hauled off and the change that had on the game. It's kind of hard to know how you make sense of a game like that.
Yeah, I think Ulster were absolutely awful in the first half. I mean, I think they went into the change room and they realised their season was on the edge of a cliff, you know. Had they shipped another hiding like they had in Galway, at home in front of their home fans, I think their season would have gone to free fall. And they had to respond. And they did respond. They were much more aggressive in the second half, much more direct, held on to the ball. And they put Munster under pressure. And Munster did ship a yellow card, which led to the first try. But the pressure brought those cards out. You know, Munster were struggling to hang on at the rocks and stuff. And then the red card changed everything. You know, once Ulster then got the second try and they got the sniff of it, I think they just piled the pressure on. They just, and the crowd got behind them. And I think Munster kind of beat themselves in some ways. Like, they played most of the second half with 14 men and one stage with 13. So, you know, once Ulster got on the front foot. But it was just, I think, Ulster woke up, you know, from a really bad 80 minutes in Galway and a horrific 40 minutes in front of their home fans. It was awful. I mean, it was hard to find a positive in the whole thing. But they just seemed to realise that, you know, if this went as it was going, that their season wasn't going to go to free fall. And I think they responded. So, you know, but we've seen Ulster respond this year before, and, you know, we're not sure if they'll respond again, and they'll have to, next Saturday in the RDS, have to back this up. They can't just fall away again. But it's just been their bugbear, not just this year, but for the last few seasons, just a lack of consistency. But it was worrying the last in Galway, and again, the first 40 minutes, it wasn't just inconsistent, it was dreadful, and that's a worry.
Does it bode well for Les Kissetti that maybe something was said at halftime? Because when I tuned into the game, they're already 17-0 down, and the first thing I thought was, Les Kiss's job is on the line here. This is unacceptable, given how poor they were at the sports ground, that they follow it up with another dreadful 40 minutes. And I just wonder, do the Ulster players maybe realise that at the break, and then the second half they were playing for their head coach?
There could have been an element of that, because there was a lot of sulphur in the air in the media up in Ulster, you know, after the Connacht game. There was some dreadful headlines in the presses, including Les's name, you know. So he certainly was under
huge
pressure.
Last Christmas, I think, was one of them.
Yeah. Pretty tacky, but, you know, there was sulphur in the air. And, I think there was an element of that, you know. I think he would have been under huge pressure going to Dublin this weekend, and they did respond. But I just can't get my head around this, the Ulster team. You know, this is not a new phenomenon for them to have this kind of bungee cord season where they play some fantastic rugby. We've seen them at times are outstanding, and then they kind of fall off a cliff. And even within a game, they can have a great 40 minutes, a great 20 minutes and slip away. So it's really a problem. Now, to their credit, they have some injuries and they've had to rotate the squad like everybody else. And I think if you step back from it and look at them as a squad, they are light up front in the front five. And I think Munster shipped some injuries in the second half. They lost Billy Holland actually after 20 minutes, who was a huge loss to them. Yeah. They shipped some injuries in the second half, in the front row and in the back row. And that certainly meant that there was the World Season campaign was coming to replace them, and it helped Ulster. But Ulster themselves are not at the moment probably able to compete with the big guns in the front five. And that's an issue. You know, they're really, it's an area, they have a really good backline, but they really have to look at their pack, their front five in particular, and how they're going to bolster that going forward. Because when you get to the business end of the season, it's going to be a problem, I think, for them to meet the big guns. And they're, you know, Europe, they're still in control of their season, but you'd worry for them in Europe now. I mean, they have La Rochelle at home, but La Rochelle seem to be happy to play away from home as much as at home. So that could be a very difficult one for them. If they lose La Rochelle, they could go to Europe, and that'll be another kind of, you know, gut punch to them for the season, you know.
And on Munster then, discipline has been a problem for them all season. And initially, the theory was out there that maybe Razzy Erasmus's impending departure was contributing to it, that discipline might be the kind of thing to slip when you have a lame duck coach. But it's continued, and Van Graan was talking about it after the loss to Ulster the other night. They give away a lot of penalties every game, so that's one big issue for them. But then I suppose in light of what they've done at Welford Road and against Leicester, really good performances, does the past two games just more than anything just expose a lack of depth with Munster? Is that ultimately what's going on here?
I think again they've had their injury problems, you know. They're not fully fit as a squad. They had to travel again with all influential guys, you know, obviously Conor Murray, CJ Standard and Peter Manny. But ironically, in the first half, Ulster were on the wrong side of the referee. The penalty count, I think, at halftime was 7-2. And Ulster were shipping, like taking water in that department. And in the second half, it was Munster. Like, Munster coughed up, I think, 10 penalties in the second half. Which, you know, apart from the red card, which was just a moment of madness, like going in that high, but they were in yellow card territory early doors in the second half, and eventually Witcherly got the yellow card for being like consistent defensive errors. It seems to me that if you look at Munster, when they are in good space, they're dominating the contact, they're dominating the pace of the game, they're you know, in the ascendancy, their discipline's fine. But when you put them under the screw, you turn it on them, you put them inside their own 22 for prolonged periods, that's when they start to slip in terms of discipline and give away penalties. And that's just pressure. So they're going to have to find a way to defend under pressure without giving away penalties and yellow cards. It's very easy not to give away penalties when you're dominating the game. And, you know, you get caught for the odd holding on at a ruck in the opposition half. Because, you know, you didn't get numbers to it. You can live with those, two or three of those a game, or maybe not many more, but when you find yourself just getting pained for in the side, off your feet, hands in the ruck, when you're under the gun, and then the yellow card comes out after two or three of those, they're the ones that really hurt you. So it looks to me like Munster have to look at their accuracy in defence when they're under the cosh, and not to panic and give away those killer penalties that then end up with a card against you.
They've lost those two games, Eddie, in very different circumstances. One where that ratchet start is almost pulled back and they nearly beat Leinster on the finishing line, and then the following week they are the side that have come racing out of the blocks and they can't hold it and sustain it for 80 minutes. How frustrating is that as a head coach when you see your team put themselves in a position where they could have won both, they've lost both, and they have managed to do so in very different ways?
Well, again, most coaches talk about you know, consistency over 80 minutes, trying to play for 80 minutes and not playing for 40 or playing for 20 here and 20 there. So that is beginning to creep into Munster's performances. Like, they got caught absolutely cold by Leinster. And again, you know, there was a yellow card and a penalty try in that game, which, you know, probably cost them in the end. So they gave themselves a huge mountain to climb against Leinster. I thought they'd play really well in the second half, but I didn't think Leinster really were going to lose it, particularly when Larmour cut loose. You know, I think that just got Leinster in the safe space. But yeah, they just got to learn to play over 80 minutes. And they, looking at the Leicester games, they did that. You know, they were, I thought they beat Leicester comfortably. But I'm, at the moment, I'm looking at the Europe, particularly the England teams, and seeing them as, like, maybe they're not as good as they think they are, you know, in the Aviva Premiership. And the evidence to suggest that is there. If you look at the back-to-backs in Europe, the England teams didn't do well. Like, I mean, I think Exeter are a really good side. I think they're very well coached. They're very clear in their game plan. They're very aggressive. And I think still Leinster put them away pretty comfortably in those two back-to-back games. And, you know, if you look at the second one in the Aviva, like, Exeter scored two tries. There were 17 points to three up, and Leinster just, down to 14 men, circled the wagons, came back and beat them. So just wonder maybe that when we measure ourselves against the English teams, maybe we give them too much credit. And maybe, you know, Munster's back-to-backs against Leicester weren't all that in a bag of chips at the end of the day, because I don't think Leicester are particularly good at the moment. They seem to be out of sorts. So maybe they just need to try and find a way to get that consistency. Now, you tend to do that with your experienced guys in the field. Then again, that flies in the face of they had some experienced guys in the field against Leinster, and they had a shocking start. So it's a bit of a conundrum. But look, as time goes, you'll see. I mean, I think Connacht, if you're pivoting away to next weekend, Connacht are going to really put it up to them. Connacht think that they'd a sniff after, you know, running Leinster so close. I think Connacht will leave nothing in the tank next weekend in Tolland Park. And Munster will have been the full of their health, or you'll get caught. You know, they've already beaten Munster this year in Galway.
Yeah, that's
so they won't be worried eating their pre-match meal about that. You know,
it's a 7:45 kickoff, and Leinster Ulster is 5:35 at the RDS. I know you just caught the highlights of Leinster Connacht because you were up in Belfast for the Ulster game. But you may have seen in the highlights Sean Cronin, for instance, at one stage burning Bundiaki on the outside. And he ultimately ended up with man of the match, Sean Cronin. And there's not many hookers who can do that. And he was talking last week about the Irish situation, saying he hadn't spoken with Joe Schmidt since November, that at that time, Joe thought I didn't hit the ground running at the start of the season, probably fair enough. And he was coming back from an injury or whatever. I presume Sean Cronin has to go right back into the Irish squad again. You've got Rory Best coming back this week as well. There's Rob Herring, there's James Tracy, and Niall Scannell's injured is the news today, but presumably he'll be okay in time for Six Nations time. Like, can you explain to me why Sean Cronin maybe even doesn't start a lot of games as good as Rory Best is, or certainly why he's not the nailed-on number two going into the Six Nations, or is he?
It depends on how Joe Schmidt sees him. I think for Ireland, he's had cameo roles off the bench very successfully, because he is one of the quickest hookers in the world. I mean, he's absolutely electric off the mark. And I actually bumped into him before the Autumn Internationals, and he was pretty down about the fact that he hadn't got even into the squad, you know. I don't know if he was thinking he was going to get a game, but he thought he might have made the extended squad. So I think he went back and just felt he had to play his way back in. And I think he's responding to the fact that he wants to put it up to the coach to say, look, I'm back, and I know you thought my form was off start of season, but I'm definitely back with a bang now. But going back to his selections for Ireland, they tend to be off the bench, where he comes on with 20 minutes to go and he absolutely kills the tired defenders, because his first step is so fast. You find when he comes on, he has an immediate impact, because he gets around people who are tired, he gets through gaps that you don't get in the first hour because people close them. And maybe the coach, Joe Schmidt, sees him as that kind of an impact player off the bench. If he has a bugbear, at times his darts can go a bit awry. You know, he has those moments. But look, all he can do is, you know, kind of put pressure on the coach to put him back in. But if he's going into Europe, you'd like to see him get a shot here in Europe and get a chance to prove himself. If he doesn't get a shot at Leinster in Europe, if he's again off the bench kind of scenario, it could cost him, because I suppose George Schmidt will look at the guys who are starting through Europe now and how they do going into the Six Nations. If you're not starting for your province, you're getting 20 minutes at the end off the bench. It's very hard to fight your way into the Irish squad on the back of those kind of short, you know, short game performances, 15-20 minutes.
He started against Exeter, but then burst his tooth. And
that was
a big chance for him.
But that was unlucky.
I don't know. I think, you know, speaking as a layman, and I think a lot of the Irish fans watching, like, you love Cronin coming off the bench. It just makes sense. So if it's just his darts that's a weakness, I don't know. Quite often it's hard for a hooker to come on and throw well anyway.
It is, yeah, but I don't think you can use that as an excuse in a modern game. You know, I think, and I don't want to say he's a bad thrower. He just has these moments at times where his darts let him down. I've seen that happen to him, but that's not all the time. But he's definitely, his strength is around the field, ball carrying, and he's a good work rate when he comes on.
Yeah.
But I suppose it depends on how Joe Schmidt sees him. Does Joe Schmidt see him as a starter or a guy who can have an impact off the bench? Personally, I have a huge time for him as a player. I think he's the kind of guy you want on the field early, because he can cause problems even for fresh defences.
Yeah.
Because he's absolutely lightning quick, and he's a good ball carrier, he's a great work rate. It's just, but the competition, there's a lot of competition. You know, you can't write off the other hookers or on the provinces either. They're all pitching up well, and all these come down to individual decisions by the coach. And you know, he knows what he wants in the hooker. Maybe he wants something else from somebody else. It's hard to say sometimes. Mm. They're all tight calls. So
yeah,
I'd be reticent, always reticent to criticize the coach for making a selection call, because they have more information than you have or I have, because they're closer to it and they have their reasons. So, but some of them, they're tough calls, no doubt. But I think Cronin has responded anyway for what Joe Schmidt told him early in the year, that he had a slow start. I think he's making his case now for sure.
Eddie, before we let you go, if you can give it your answer quite briefly, it surrounds maybe another member of the subs bench of the Six Nations. Who's your number two scrum half at the moment behind Conor Murray, bearing in mind Marmion had possession of the jersey in the autumn, Luke McGrath had a really good season, and John Cooney at the age of 27 is having a breakout season?
Yeah, well, again, I think, to be fair, McGrath, to me, has been incredibly consistent, and he's been really dangerous. Now, he's playing with a very good team there. Like, he's on the front foot. I have to say, I like what Cooney's done with Ulster. He's taken on a huge pair of boots to fill, and he's certainly filled them. And his touchline conversion the other night, his kicking has been superb. But like, it's a tough one again. And Marmion, again, hasn't done anything wrong. He's still a brilliant player. But I have to say, I think if you're looking for somebody maybe who's nosed in front for the number two shirt, for me, on a balance at the moment, it'd be McGrath. But I suppose for the other, for Marmion as well, and for Cooney, it'll probably go down to now how they do in the two European games. If they really make a big impact in those games for their province, that could get them into the number two slot. But I think Cooney at the moment will be fancying his, or sorry, not Cooney, but McGrath will be fancying his chance at the moment. But I think for good reason, he's played really superbly this year.
Mm, tough calls. Who'd be a coach?
I used to be.
Thanks a million, Eddie. Cheers.
Okay, boys.
Off the Ball on Newstalk.
In association with the Air Sport app, allowing you to cast your favourite sporting action from your tablet or mobile phone straight to your TV.